April 1986. The time is 4:36 p.m. And will the HESP committee please come to order? We have a quorum of the committee. We have Representative Hurley, we have Representative Thompson, Representative Hanley, and myself, Max Gruenberg. Representative Kopanen is excused from the call of the House today because of illness. We have before us, and we also have Representative Pettyjohn entering the room. So we have a quorum of the committee and can conduct business. We have three bills before us, and we also have an announcement. Prior to taking up any of the bills, we have a bill that Senator Jaroff has requested that we waive, and this is a bill, city substitute for Senate Bill 319, finance, and you should have a cover memo on that. This is an act relating, or rather establishing, a special education service agency, and it is presently referred to our committee, and we have heard a companion bill, House Bill 543, sponsored by Representative Duncan, which is currently in House Finance. I'd like members to review this legislation, and particularly Nancy Bennett's bill comparison between the two bills, and see if you're willing to waive it. What I want to do, Nancy, if you can circulate a chit sheet around. I see some of the members may wish to sign that now. If you'd like to have overnight to review this, what I would propose to do would be to check with you on the floor of the House tomorrow. And if you still need more time, then we can take this up at the commencement of the hearing tomorrow. I don't want to rush anything, but there are just very few areas of difference. It seems to me just personally that the Senate language is reasonable, but that's entirely up to you. And again, waiver takes unanimous consent. Is there any discussion at this point? Fine. We'll just pass the chit sheet around, and you need not sign unless you feel comfortable enough doing it. Moving on to the next item of business, we have before us Senate Bill 457. And this is an act relating to the State Physical Therapy Board and providing for an effective date. We have had before us House Bill 640, which is also in your bill file, the Labor and Commerce Committee version, and I believe the only difference between that bill and the bill which had earlier passed out of this committee is contained on line 11 of page 1. We would have extended it to 1990. And the Labor and Commerce Committee version extends it to 1989, as does the Senate version. As I understand, the Senate version is identical to the Labor and Commerce Committee version. We have Ms. Sharon Macklin here to testify on behalf of the board and answer any questions. We also have a letter of intent. It would be my intent to take up this bill, and if the members desire to mark it up, we can do so. Otherwise, to move it out and also consider the letter of intent. Ms. Macklin, the floor is yours.
Thank you. My name is Sharon Macklin. I'm representing the Physical Therapists Association, and we support the committee substitute for Senate Bill 457 with the change addressing the amount of time that the board would be in existence to 1989 rather than 1990, which the House bill has in it. That's the only change, although in addition to that, the Senate has passed a letter of intent that we also support, and I believe that each of you have a copy of the letter of intent. For your information, what the letter of intent does is it requests the Physical Therapy Board to maintain records regarding the issue of practice without referral, records on how many physical therapists are practicing without referral, if there are any complaints, amount of years that the physical therapists have been licensed and practicing and that kind of thing, so that after 3 years the board can review the information collected, and if there are any problems at that time, then the legislation would be looked at again. We, as I said, we support this letter of intent. It also contains language that would require that physical therapists have 25 hours of continuing medical education every 2 years, and that's another issue that we, the Physical Therapists Association, does also approve of. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to respond.
Are there questions for Ms. Macklin? Representative Hammond?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This will be the first time, I understand, that a physical therapist will be able to practice without having a patient referred from a physician. So this will be the first time that they will be qualified to accept patients without referral, and that's what we'll be evaluating at the next sunset review.
Right, right.
Thank you.
Other questions? Fine. Thank you very much, Ms. Macklin. Is there anyone else here to testify on this particular bill? If not, I think we need to get one of our two people out there in for the quorum so we can. Okay, is Representative Pettyjohn or Representative Hurley out there? We need to have them in to take a motion. What I'd like to do is there any discussion on either the bill or the letter of intent?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 457 with individual recommendations.
Representative Thompson, I just out of an excess of caution, would like to wait till we have a quorum before we take a motion on either thing. But well, you can see if, at least see if we can round up either one of them. They just walked out. We need to just have them take the motion.
Yes, I certainly appreciate the need for a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't we just stand easy for a moment?
We have to have a quorum.
Can do. I will entertain motions as soon as somebody steps back in the room. But in the meantime, let's move on to the next step. Oh, okay. Representative Pettyjohn being back. Representative Thompson, you had a motion.
I move Senate Bill 457 with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the movement of Senate Bill 457 with individual recommendations? Hearing none, that will be the order. Is there another motion?
I move the letter of intent for Senate Bill 457.
Is there objection to the movement of the letter of intent? Hearing none, what I would like to do is to have a letter prepared that the House Hess Committee endorses the Senate Hess Committee letter of intent.
Just write that on the committee.
You will just do that. Okay, fine. And I'm passing around here the... That bill now has moved with individual recommendations, and so has the letter of intent moved out and passed. Next, we have House Bill 560, and this is an act, speaking as the sponsor of this, this is an act that was introduced to cure a possible constitutional problem in an act that is what's called the Imitation Controlled Substances Act. And it is a bill that was introduced as the result of a case that was handed down by the Alaska Court of Appeals, Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W-V, State, opinion number 499, and I don't have the Pacific Reporter citation on that, Alaska, August 9, 1985. And there was language in that indicating that in order to save this from constitutional infirmity, they had to come through some tortured reasoning and read language into this statute. And footnote one in that opinion states, it appears to us that it may be argued that certain other conduct falls within the statute. An example of conduct which might fall within the statute would be a person who delivers an imitation drug honestly believing the imitation drug is a controlled substance. However, the case before us doesn't present this question. This matter hasn't been briefed on appeal. We reserve ruling on the issue. That case should be in your packet, members of the committee, as well as an opinion dated June 27, 1983, from then Attorney General Norman C. Gorsuch to the governor when the bill was up for signature, indicating certain possible problems with the bill. What we've done is, working in conjunction with Ms. Horesky from the Department of Law, have drafted some language here that is designed to cure the infirmity. And what I'd like to do before we have testimony, or Representative Thompson, I see you have a question, what I'd like to do is, so we have a bill before us, have this Bradley 419 version put before us with one particular amendment that would be, if you would look at the bill here and you see the language that's underlined, on lines 15 through 17, that language should be moved. It's technically, grammatically, a misplaced modifier. And that should be moved forward on line 15 so that that underlined language would be after the word not. So it would read, or older may not, and then the comma, and then the underlined language, with an intent to misrepresent the imitation-controlled substance as a controlled substance, comma, deliver an imitation-controlled substance, etc. Is there a motion to...
So moved.
It is moved by Representative Pettyjohn for the purpose of discussion only. And Representative Thompson, I will call on you in just a second. You have your hand up. I can see that. But I just want to explain what this does is this makes certain that the... at least hopefully make certain that the bill is constitutional by requiring a criminal intent. Otherwise, the act is likely to be struck down or at least narrowly interpreted, and this makes it very clear what the act is has been intended to do. Representative Thompson.
Not being a lawyer, such phrases are unfamiliar to me. What is a tortured interpretation?
A tortured interpretation, well, I think what we should do, Gail, are you going to be, I think Gail can discuss this. Gail's a criminal attorney. I'm just a family lawyer. But she'll explain to you what this is.
You're asking for it, given that bill we passed the other day.
I'll answer any of the questions on my side. Ms. Horesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Gail Horesky from the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. Representative Bloomberg has cited you to that case. It is a case that arose in Fairbanks. It presented a problem that we knew was in the statute by the time it got to the governor to be signed. Unfortunately, it wasn't caught while it was going through the committee process. The problem is presented by the, it's kind of incredible, but the problem is presented by the language on line 27 of the bill, which in the definition for imitation-controlled substances, it now says substance containing, and it lists it, that is not a controlled substance, that by dosage unit appearance or by representations would lead a reasonable person to believe that it was a controlled substance. And without an or in that, with the or in there, it means that an imitation controlled substance is these certain compounds, and they either by their appearance or by representations are passed off as controlled substances. That, if you take it to its extreme, theoretically could make it illegal for a person to possess aspirin or no-dose or any one of a number of over-the-counter preparations because the appearance of that particular tablet or capsule, whatever that happens to be, might look like speed or amphetamines or some other controlled substance. Now, that obviously was not the intent of the legislature. What we argued in the Morrow case is, despite the language of the statute, the court should read in and instead of or. And the court was very reluctant to do that, and especially since the jury hadn't been instructed that way below, and they sent the case back for findings of fact by the trial court. And I don't ultimately know what happened with the case. Regardless of the disposition of that case, this is a problem that's going to continue to arise every time we prosecute someone for imitation-controlled substances. So the only logical way to fix the problem, really, is to make the amendment. The language contains in Section 1 and 2 go somewhat farther than the recommendation initially suggested by the Department of Law, and that's only the Section 3 one. It's my understanding that Representative Gruenberg wants to make it clear that the person has to intentionally misrepresent the substance, imitation-controlled substance, as a controlled substance, and this language certainly does accomplish that goal. It would make it somewhat tougher to prove the crime, and that's a policy judgment. The situation that Captain Turner pointed out to me from the troopers is that they will sometimes have a situation come up where an adult will be selling what is really an imitation-controlled substance to a child, for example. That's your typical thing, because these things are peddled to kids. Kids buy them pretty cheaply, because really they're only caffeine, not speed. And then they pop three or four of them, and they get a rush off the caffeine, and they think they're high on drugs. The danger presented, of course, is that if inadvertently at some point they get the real thing, the kids can overdose, and there have been deaths outside, not in Alaska so far as I know, but outside from exactly that scenario. The problem presented with this intent language, and it, you know, maybe you just want to keep it in regardless, the problem presented with the intent language is that a person who is selling an imitation controlled substance if he or she is arrested for that, and then the lab analysis shows that it's caffeine, they'll say, well, I really thought it was a controlled substance. I thought I was selling speed. Right. And you see, if you have to prove that they knew it was an imitation controlled substance, maybe they probably did, but we have to prove it. You know, we can't get inside their mind. And basically, we have to sort of rely on their statements along with the other available evidence to attempt to prove the case.
What about a case where somebody buys something thinking that it's the drug and then resells it to somebody else, still thinking it's the drug? Mm-hmm. Catch him.
Right, that's right.
Under Grunberg.
Because it's not the sale of heroin or whatever it supposedly is, because it isn't that, but it's also not the sale, the knowing sale of imitation, because they think it's real.
Right. See, would it not in that case be an attempt to sell narcotics? Because they're laboring under a mistake of fact.
That's right.
It would be, they could not be prosecuted for the completed crime because of the defense of impossibility. They could, however, be prosecuted for an attempt to sell narcotics.
Then they'll say they knew it was fake all
along.
I don't
think so. I think it's a...
No. Okay, two things. And this is, I realize, kind of a technical legal question. They're caught. The defendant is caught in the Pettyjohn scenario on the horns of a dilemma. If they say...
They don't say anything.
Well, if
they're
the defendant...
Charged, they don't say anything.
Once they're charged.
If they defend, and if the defense is based on, I knew it was caffeine, then you got them under this. If they say, I was under the impression and I thought it was narcotics, then you can prosecute them for the attempt to sell narcotics.
It's double jeopardy.
No, either way, you can charge them in the alternative.
Mr. Chair.
I don't think so.
We can charge people in the alternative.
Mr. Chair.
Mistake of fact is an absolute defense, unlike a mistake of law.
But it's a mistake of fact that would exculpate. This is not a mistake of fact that would exculpate, but they would be guilty of the alternative crime.
Yeah, but what they were selling was not heroin. They may have thought it was heroin, but it wasn't heroin. So
is it not analogous to the case where it's an assassination attempt, and you have somebody who aims the gun? This is the typical law school scenario that you hear, that they aim the gun and they pull the trigger, but the gun's empty. They were laboring under the mistake of fact that the gun was loaded. They still attempted the homicide. And you can still get them for the attempt, although they're immune from, of course, the completed crime, because they didn't complete the crime. But you can still get them for the attempt.
You don't charge people in the alternative. I've never known a DA to charge. Am I interrupting? I'm sorry.
No, I just feel like this is part of the basic law school 101.
Criminal law 101.
Yeah.
Right.
It seems to me you got them either way.
Yeah. You got to charge them one way. You can't charge them both ways. And they keep their mouth shut until you charge them. And then once they've been charged, then they say whatever gets them off. And if you try to charge them on the other one, they'll say double jeopardy. Right?
Well, I've seen it happen.
My question is, in a case like that, I don't know. You both have been prosecutors.
Hey.
This was, by the way, this was mentioned. You know, the reviser of statutes every year comes out with a bunch of cases that should be looked at by the legislature, and this was one of those cases. My concern, and you and I talked about this earlier, and there are two different mental elements involved in this crime. It's not a typical crime, because they're two different. Number one, the question is whether you have to know that this imitation controlled substance was not the real thing. The second thing is whether you have to knowingly transfer. With respect to the question of whether you know the substance was a narcotic or you thought it was not. If you take a look at the bill as originally introduced, or you can look at the Horesco, they may have the Horesco draft in there. What I originally put in there was that the person knows is an imitation controlled substance, and also that it's transferred with the intent to misrepresent it. And when we talked earlier, in the Horesco draft, you had eliminated the knowledge requirement. And you said that the typical charging language was a reckless question of whether a person either knew it or was reckless, the reasonable person in that situation would have known. and the standard of knowledge was not, as you've said today, an intent to actual knowledge that it wasn't, but it would be a reckless state of mind. So is that not correct? You're talking about a reckless state of mind rather than, but that's not on now.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, you're correct. I think we're getting a little confused here. Maybe I'm just getting a little confused here. Right now, this statute doesn't specify a culpable mental state. That is, the state of mind with which the person must act. There is, however, a general provision in Alaska statutes that says if a culpable mental state is not otherwise specified, the one that you basically read into all the statutes that the court automatically reads into it because of this general provision is reckless as to circumstances and knowing as to conduct.
Yes, hello.
Conduct being, I hand this to you, I do this. You have to knowingly do this, not accidental.
And we're not talking about that. There's no question about that.
Right. Then the other goes to the circumstance, i.e., what was that thing you were handing? And that is where the reckless standard comes in. Okay. So all we have to do is prove that the person was reckless regarding the fact that that was an imitation-controlled substance. It doesn't answer the question that we were talking about earlier. What if the person actually does believe it's a controlled substance?
Well, if they are reckless in that belief.
Somebody told them, this is heroin here, you can have it.
Then I understand. Mike, I don't think my...
See, recklessness, it allows you to reach conduct and doesn't allow people to say, I didn't really know, when there were 1,400 facts staring them in the face that would have told any reasonable person, you know, that color is blue or that light is red. Okay. They can't deny obvious facts. But if they say, you know, I believe that it was heroin because so-and-so told me and it tasted like heroin and it had the right consistency, they actually do believe it's heroin. That's not reckless. It may be mistaken, but it's not reckless.
I think that Representative Thompson had an excellent suggestion here. This is maybe something that's a more appropriate inquiry for the Judiciary Committee where this goes next. But we have another witness. Did you wish to testify, sir?
My request was very narrowly defined, Mr. Chairman, but requested an injunction and relief from this torture interpretation of legal matters for the rest of us who are non-lawyers on this escalator.
I understand, and I think that's well taken. Would you please give us your name?
Yes, sir, I'll join you. My name is Joseph Turner, and I'm a representative for the Department of Public Safety. And essentially what I'd like to do is change the stance of the public safety's opposition, withdraw that opposition, and we'll take a neutral stance. And essentially the reservation that I had and still have is that the simplicity that I would like to have in this particular bill was there in its original draft, or the bill as it exists today, with the exception of the end that we do need. I would say that if I am going out here, I am going to peddle drugs, I'm going to sell to you some, what I purport to be, speed. Whatever it may be, I will sell it to you. I will supplement my income with it. When you arrest me for it, I will say, Bob, or whoever it may be that sold me the speed, told me it was speed.
Yes,
I don't use the stuff. I don't know what it is. It was sold to me the speed. I supplemented my income. Thank you very much. You want to prove that I know differently? And I say when you put the intent in there, it makes it very, very difficult for us as law enforcement to prove it.
Let me inquire. How about, you've heard the testimony of Ms. Horesky that we're talking about a reckless state of mind. That's the same state of mind you have with respect to other drug offenses right now. And you're able to prosecute on those, are you not?
Yes.
And so we're basically talking about the same. It should be known. You're shaking your head.
No, because you have the intention.
Let's do it in judiciary.
We'll do it in judiciary. Okay. Are there any amendments anybody wishes to make? My goal, folks, is solely to make this unconstitutional. Okay. Is there any? Okay. Representative Pennyjohn has moved it out with individual recommendation. Is there objection? Representative Thompson? That will be the order. Representative Pettyjohn moves it individual rights. We will deal with this thorny problem down the line. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We now have a bill on, are we ready? Are we online? Paul, why don't you be the first witness and then you can join us. This last bill we have is
319?
226.
226.
Truancy.
Truancy.
We have a committee. Are we ready to go?
Yes, we're ready.
Okay. I'm going to put us on the line here. Good afternoon. We are in session with the House Hess Committee. The bill before us is a bill by Senator Paul Fisher entitled An Act Relating to the Violation of Compulsory Education Laws, Senate Bill 226. We'd like to welcome all people on the teleconference. It is now 3 minutes after 5 on the 22nd of the April, Tuesday. We have a quorum of the committee. We have Representative Hanley. We have Alice Hanley of Anchorage. Representative Dave Thompson of Kodiak, Representative Fritz Pettyjohn of Anchorage, Representative Katie Hurley of Matsu, and I'm Max Gruenberg, co-chair of the committee from Anchorage. Representative Nilo Kopanen is excused as the result of illness, and Representative Robin Taylor is in a meeting with another legislator at the moment and hopefully will be along later. We have the witness here. First witness to testify is the bill sponsor, Senator Paul Fisher. Is there anyone online in any station who wishes to testify?
Yes, my name is Dagan Saldana.
All right. If you would give your name to the moderator there, and our moderator here will call and give me the particulars, so we will have somebody to testify in Saldana, apparently. If you could please take care of that. The first, and anyone else, please let us know if you would like to testify. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on the bill? Okay, if you would please sign in. We have another witness here in Juneau to testify. Senator, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If it's okay with the chair, can I just be an observer and hear the testimony? Because I think the testimony might be what I would like to hear anyhow.
Certainly, and then you can testify later.
Okay,
if
I might. Yes.
Why don't you come up and join here at Representative Copeland's seat, since he won't be here today. And what is the gentleman's name in Saldana?
Dennis Daggett.
Mr. Daggett, would you please, would you care to testify? Please just commence.
My name is Dennis Daggett. I'm Associate Superintendent for Structural Services on the Kenai Peninsula. I originally approached Senator Fisher and other members of the legislature regarding a problem we had perceived with the existing statutes having to do with compulsory attendance, specifically as those statutes had to do with the section 1430.020, which deals with violations. I've conducted a side-by-side comparison of the existing statutes, the proposed House Committee substitutes, and I offer the following comments. Legal advice was obtained from our borough attorney, but no written opinions are available at such short notice. 1430.010, as proposed, would add a condition on other persons that are specified in the statute, requiring that they have legal custody. In many circumstances in our district, students reside with persons who have not been given legal custody. In some cases, kids have left the home of their natural parents and are residing with friends who are putting them up. In another kind of specific and more appropriate case, students who are boarding home parents from schools that do not have grades 9, 10, 11, or 12 reside with boarding home parents who have not specifically been granted legal custody. Our concern is by adding that specific statement, legal custody, and legal opinion in our area seems to feel that it was tied together, control and legal custody of, that we would then be precluded from being able to deal with people who had control of the child in the absence of the legal custody. So that particular addition to 1430.010 presents some problems for us. In the case of 1430.020, either it appears that it could delete and rewrite the existing violations paragraph, or if that's not the case, the substitute does not change the section, particularly the phrase at the end of the section that says, in any event, at the expiration of the school year, the person shall be released and discharged from all penalties provided by this section. When I originally approached Senator Fisher and others about getting a change in this particular section, that was the problem that I had perceived in dealing with truancies here in the Kenai. All the rest of the sections dealing with compulsory attendance weren't broken. This one was, and it was my suggested remedy just to delete that sentence so that our existing procedures worked out in cooperation with the district attorney's office and our school board and our administration could be applied. That part that sparked the initial attention to this portion of statute has not been fixed by the proposed substitute. I would suggest that gets them into court prior to December 15th at the very earliest, the court has informed us, the district attorney's office has informed us, that good legal counsel provided by the public defender's office can delay that for another 5 to 5.5 months through procedural matters. And the end of the school year occurs, and we've had a child who's not been in attendance for a year, and there's no recourse we can take. And because at the end of the school year, everything becomes moot, we start again fresh when the school year begins again. By deleting, simply deleting the sentence from statute that says, in any event, at the expiration of the school year, the person shall be released, discharged from all penalties provided by the section. A simple deletion of that sentence would correct the problem that we sought the remedy, and I would not recommend any other changes in the regulation until such time as we found out how it worked without that limitation. I have no questions, no further comments, but could respond to questions.
Yes, Mr. Daggett, thank you very much. This is Max Gruenberg. I'd like to respond to both things you mentioned before throwing this open to the other members of the committee. First of all, with respect to Section 020, the language that's there completely substitutes for Section 020. So the language you're concerned about would be totally eliminated. In other words, the problem would be cured in the bill.
Uh-huh.
Do you follow me?
Right.
It is a complete substitution for the new section. If you compare the language in Section 1, where it says amended to read from, and that's line 9, with the language on line 18, quote, repealed and reenacted to read, unquote.
Right.
When you say something, and this is the way the bill drafters down here in Juneau work, sir, when they say it's amended to read, they set out the entire language, as they did in Section 1. Anything they're adding to the section, they underline. If they're deleting something from the section, they put it in parentheses, brackets actually, and they capitalize it, like they did on line 13, you see? They added legal custody and then they deleted the responsibility for or. If, on the other hand, they are wiping out the statute and having a totally new statute, they say it's repealed and reenacted to read, and that's what they did in Section 2. So the language you want is going, the language you don't want, I'm sorry, is going to be gone.
Okay, I appreciate that comment. In my copy that I received to Legislative Affairs Office, there was no statement regarding Section 1430.020 that it had either been repealed or amended.
I see, okay. Then the question, and I know Senator Fisher likes the original language we had, but as long as we're talking about this, the committee substitute here, the language, quote, having legal custody and, instead of leaving the present language, the responsibility for, or,
right.
If we were to leave that present language in, would that cure your problem with Section 1?
Yeah, and I do have a bit of a problem with Section 030. Seems that you're specifying a particular format there, which may or may not meet all situations across the state.
What would you like to go through? I assume you have what I'm looking. Do you have a what says work draft across the top and in the upper right hand corner says James 4386?
No, I don't have that copy. I have a House committee substitute for a Senate committee substitute copy of that.
Yes, if you look up in the upper right-hand corner, it doesn't. Okay, this is it says House CS 4CS for Senate Bill 226 Hess.
Right, that's what it does say.
Okay, you were reading off the same sheet of music. Please go right ahead. What is your problem with Section 3? If you or your comments or suggestions on Section 3?
Essentially, as we've written, it would tend to lengthen the process of getting the parent into compliance and further eliminate the chance of court action in the most severe cases. I didn't see that part needed fixing necessarily. It seems to me that regulation at this point or statute at this point is trying to substitute for good management. And it, while it mimics to some extent the procedures we follow in this district, it may not be an appropriate statute to follow in a more remotely settled area. And I think that I would just suggest that maybe it's not necessary to be quite as specific in Section 030 as the statute is written now. I think we have to be aware that there are considerable differences of within the state, in the size of districts and the way things are best handled.
If Section 3 were eliminated entirely and going, allowing the local government to do their normal good management practices, I'd like you to focus, if you would, on lines 14 through 17 of Section 1, that other language we're adding in there, or at least potentially would. What do you think about that, and what do you think about the language in Section 4 on lines 20 and 21 of Line 2, and then we'll talk about the repealer thing last. I'm just wondering if you like anything else that's in the bill.
Well, I think the way the current statute is written in Section 010, that's what I'm looking at right now, that seems appropriate if we address the problem with about legal custody. As far as Section 020 is concerned, simply dropping the sentence about the end of the school year dismissing the charges would suffice at that point. If indeed we're going to rewrite that section as you suggested and eliminate it and just simply say a violation is a violation, I'm not sure what we've done.
I'll have to explain. Okay, a violation is defined in the criminal law. And what one of the things we're trying to do here in a number of committees in the House, anyway, is attempting to standardize criminal penalties.
Right.
A violation is defined in the criminal code as, and that's a technical term of art, it's there in the criminal code, and it's a fine of up to $300.
Okay, so we would reference at that point to the criminal code for penalty.
Exactly.
Okay, then I have no problem with that section. And as far as Section 030 is concerned, my recommendation there would be to be less specific about the procedures to be used.
Well, maybe we would just eliminate Section 3. I don't know, but what Section 4 does, just for your information, it adds another ground for finding somebody to be a child in need of aid. And this would allow the court to find a child to be a child in need of aid because they're habitually absent from school. Actually,
right.
if we eliminate Section 3, we have to eliminate Section 4.
That's fine also.
Yeah. And Section 5 would eliminate the provision that has truancy officers, that allows a district to appoint truancy officers. I understand you may have some concern about that, too.
Well, the district does not have police powers, nor does it intend to assume so. And it would not be appropriate to conclude that just because we have somebody who is named as truant officer that we, in essence, are going out with a little white net chasing kids in the woods. But we do have somebody who is named in district who once all avenues are pursued is required in our local policies regarding truancy. We have somebody who follows up at the district level. Whether or not you delete the policy, we would have somebody who would coordinate within the district, bring any charges that in a few cases it would be necessary to go to the board for make and file a report, and that would be called a variety of things, but truant officer will I think what we've got to look at is in remote situations, how we'll deal with it in those areas, whether or not there would be a need for somebody to have some recourse to either the village safety officer or somebody.
Thank you. Are there questions, Senator Fisher or any members of the committee? What I'm going to do, just so you understand what Section 5 deals with, I'm going to read you 1430050, so that you can see, and the members of the committee can see precisely what this says. By the way, this was drafted with the assistance of some people in the State Department of Education, so I'm not a great expert on this either. Truant officers. Subsection A, if it is not practical for an existing law enforcement agency to enforce AS 1430010, the governing body of the school district or the Bureau of Indian Affairs may appoint the necessary truant officers to enforce AS 1430010. That's the truancy section. The state shall not contribute to the expenses of an officer appointed by the BIA. Then subsection B. A truant officer may arrest and bring before any district court judge or magistrate a person violating AS 1430010 upon a warrant issued by the district court judge or magistrate. That is what the present language says, Mr. Daggett.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. It's right in front of me. And the proposal is to delete that.
Yeah, your feeling is that it might be helpful in some rural areas to have it in.
And I have no problem with the deletion. I'm not sure what it would do in rural areas.
I see. Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions by any members of the committee or Senator Pettijohn? Representative Pettijohn?
Yeah, this is Fritz Pettijohn. Did you say now that you don't mind Section 2 of the House Committee Substitute where it just says that violating provisions of 010 would mean that you're guilty of a violation? Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Pettijohn, if, as I understand it, Section 020 is supposed to be changed simply to say person in violation, committed a violation, and that is referenced to some other penalty section. Mm-hmm. And the original intent that I had in drawing attention to this statute would be to be accomplished, because in the process of deleting that wording, you've deleted the section that now causes us to lose out on pursuing these cases because the end of the school year occurs. Is deleted, and that's what I was originally after.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. What was your intention if let's say Senator Fisher's original bill as he introduced it, which simply deleted that final sentence in 1430.020, was it your intention to conduct these prosecutions and try to have the individuals serve any jail sentence for the violation?
No, it was our intention to pursue as much as possible a legitimate recourse with people who are responsible for the providing, getting the kids to school. There are not a lot of folks who fall in this category, but we do have some kids that we really think are savable, and somehow, because we're not an agency of the court and we're not a police agency, we don't have enough clout with them. And we need to be able to stand before a judge or a magistrate on equal terms with those parents and say to those folks, in this particular case, this kid should be in school, these are the reasons why, and the parent would have a chance to be there and present their side of it, and for some other to referee that situation. There are a few cases every year. One of them occurred this year, a 14-year-old girl not living with parents, living with her boyfriend in her boyfriend's bedroom with his mother, and we could not get anybody to interact in that situation. It was not, the kid was not determined to be at risk as far as juvenile justice was concerned or child protective services was concerned. We felt that we wanted to pursue that, but it did not occur during a timeline that the present statutes permit. In other words, the district attorney says, hey, you didn't get this to us before December 15th. We can't afford to pursue it any further because we had no chance of winning. And so we lost that kid. And we truly don't want to lose those guys. We want to be able to help them. And this is just one more tool in the arsenal.
Okay, so you feel that a fine, which is up to $300 for a violation, would be...
last time this bill was up, but Representative Taylor had suggested the language, the violation language, was good too, because it wouldn't be a substantial enough fine for a jury trial in the whole schmear. Are there any other questions or comments, Senator?
Just a comment, Dennis, if you could just stay online. Let me sound this out and see what you think. If we kept Section 1,
except
for the change that you recommended in the House CS, keep Section 2, which makes it a violation, eliminate Section 3 and Section 4, and keep Section 5. What do you think of that proposal?
I can live with that. Okay. That would allow me to be interacting with folks so that we could get something done for kids, and that's what I'm looking for.
Thank you very much, sir. Is there anyone else online who would like to testify? Hearing none, Mr. Daggett, you're welcome to stay. Oh, Representative Hurley had her hand up. I'm sorry. You have to flip your...
Mr. Chairman, did you say that you were going to, or Senator Fisher, that you were going to leave Section 1 as in this committee session?
No, we would change the language on line 13.
So it would be back.
Yeah, it would be back.
Okay.
That would be it.
Thank you.
Certainly. nobody else online to testify. I believe we have Carolyn Frischetti, who is from the Department of Health and Social Services here to testify. If you would just flip your toggle switch up there, then Mr. Daggett can hear your testimony.
Yes, Representative Gruenberg, I'm Carolyn Frischetti from the Department of Health and Social Services. And the department feels that this legislation, in the first place, is intrusive on families. I'd like to refer to the position paper, which I've just has been handed out to the committee. Under the current statute, there are already provisions for persons who violate the compulsory school attendance law, and the department wouldn't see any particular problem with the proposed change in 1430.020.
And Ms. Frischetti, before you continue,
yes.
You realize what we're considering here would eliminate Section 4, which is apparently the section you have the problem with. And would your comments still pertain if we eliminate Section 4? Do you have the committee substitute?
Yes, I do. And if Section 4 is eliminated, I would have no problem with the bill.
Thank you. I know people are anxious to go home to dinner.
Bless
and
you,
if
Max.
We if we can eliminate your problem and do that,
and
thank
make
you
more people feel good.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Senator. We'll take up a little thing in a moment here. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you. So, Paul, let me get this straight.
Why don't we take this line by line? I know what he's doing here.
Okay.
The first thing was on line 13.
I move we. You want a motion, or are you going to do it?
What I could do is just go through it and then take the motion. Is that okay?
I don't believe we've moved. What do we have in front of us? I think we need a motion to move a bill here first.
Would you please give us such a motion? We need a motion to adopt the James 4-3 well, committee substitute for discussion.
Fine. So moved.
Representative Thompson has moved that. We may have already had such a motion. Anyway, would anybody like to go through and mark this up, or do you want me to give you what I think this is?
Well, if you're succinct, please proceed.
Thank you. Line 13. We would eliminate the new language and go back to the responsibility for or.
Right.
The rest of Section 1 remains the same as in the committee substitute. Section 2 remains the same. Section
now hold it.
Section yeah. 2. Section 2 would remain the same.
I think mm-hmm. we need to delete on line 20 a notice received under.
Right.
I see.
And then change AS 1430.030D to AS 1430.010.
Right.
So, okay, so Nancy, why don't you give us what the language would be? Who fails to comply with it would be AS
1430.010.
AS 1430.010. I'm sorry. Thank you all. Okay.
Right.
Can we continue right along?
Let's do it. Can I have that Title 14 real quick, please?
Title 14 is here.
Chris.
By the way, we're still on the line, so be sure you keep your toggle switch down if you're talking. Section 3 is eliminated in its entirety. Section 4 is eliminated in its entirety. And Section 5 would become the new subsection 3. So Representative Thompson.
If we do all that, would it be easier to just go with the original bill?
No.
No.
No. Okay. Would somebody move that as an amendment and block?
En masse.
En masse. That is an amendment en masse and block. We're considering it as one amendment. Are there further amendments or questions? Senator, with that one change that Nancy was mentioning, that's a technical conforming change. You don't have a problem with
no.
that, do you?
No.
Representative Thompson?
Senator, are you satisfied with those changes? Is that
yes. Yes, the way it is now, I'm satisfied.
And the department, I assume, remains satisfied.
There's no problem with deleting that language about truant officers, right?
We've heard nothing of in the contrary, and the Department of Education suggested that.
Okay.
Are there other amendments? Is there a motion to move the bill as a committee substitute as amended? Representative Thompson has so moved. You have to speak, so we're on the record.
I move House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 226 as amended with individual recommendations.
Is there objections to that? If not, that will be the order. Any other business to come before us? Is there a motion to adhern?
Do we have the chit sheet on waiving?
Yeah, I've got it here. Some people, I gather, Representative Hanley wants to continue to look at it.
I'd like to look at that.
And Representative Petty John, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. Thank you all. This meeting is adjourned. It's now 5:27.